Good morning, sir.
Oh, good morning to you.
Are you interested in attending the service, or do you merely wish to walk around the abbey?
Well, I'm not keen to walk around. I should prefer to attend the service.
Of course, sir. Unfortunately, sir, it doesn't start for another 3/4 of an hour, but if you would like to come in anyway...
Yes, I think I would. Well, I suppose on a visit to London one ought to see some sights. I shall sit myself down and see what I may from here. Well, Septimus Harding, this is a very big adventure. A great step is to be taken today. For there are some points in a man's life, are there not, where great steps must be taken. When a man must be bold, hold fast what he thinks is right. Indeed, I should have held fast much sooner. Oh, this has been, from the start, a very sorry affair.
The Warden by Anthony Trollope. Dramatized for radio by Martin Wade. With Alec McCowan as Harding, Juliet Aubrey as Eleanor, Douglas Hodge as John Bold, Stephen Moore as Dr. Grantley, and Janet Moore as Mary Bold. Episode 1.
When I say from the start of the affair, I don't at all mean from the time that I became warden of the hospital. The past 10 years at Barchester have been, for the most part, happy years. No, I mean rather last June, and that mild evening when I was in the garden playing the cello to a small audience of men from the hospital. Bunce, dear old Bunce. He was among them, of course, and there were a few others. And a visitor arrived, walking slowly across the lawn.
Oh, no, who's this, then? Mr. Bold, isn't it?
Good evening,
Mr. Bold. It is very pleasant to see you.
Thank you, but I pray don't stop on my account. You know how fond I am of sacred music. Besides, you have an audience.
I do. And more patient and tolerant listeners you couldn't hope to find. I shall finish the piece, then.
Do so, Mr. Harding. Finish it. Play another piece after that, if you wish. I'd gladly delay our conversation. For believe me, it will cause nothing but unhappiness.
Thank you, Mr. Harding.
Goodbye, Mr. Harding.
Goodbye, Crumple. Goodbye, Gazy.
Well, you know, Mr. Bold, you do not come here nearly as often as Eleanor and I would like. She is not at home, by the way, but I'm certain she won't be too long.
Well, actually, sir...
It's a pleasure to see you. And, of course, an evening visitor is worth 10 such in the morning. Morning visits are all formality and business, I find.
Yes. Yes, indeed. But I'm afraid I have rather reversed the order of things.
Who?
I owe you much apology for doing so. It is on business that I have called. I wish to speak to you about the hospital.
The hospital? Oh, very well. Speak, please. If you are seeking information, I'll tell you anything I can.
You're very kind. It's about the accounts.
Ah, well, then, I can tell you almost nothing. In respect to the hospital's finances, I'm as ignorant as a child. I know they pay me £800 per annum.
Yes.
But that, I fear, is pretty much all I can tell you. So, how are you keeping, Mr. Bolt? How is Mary, your dear sister?
We are both very well, thank you. Mr. Harding, regarding the hospital...
Yes, Chadwick's the fellow to see. He's the steward, you understand. The accounts are his business.
Yeah, I've already spoken to Mr. Chadwick.
Oh.
Mr. Harding, I hope you won't object to discussing the hospital with me.
Well, I hope so, too. I'm aware that you are a man of, shall we say, reforming tendencies, Mr. Bold. You have a very commendable enthusiasm for putting wrongs to rights. So I take it you have found something wrong
with the situation here.
Mr. Harding, when first I was appointed warden of Hiram's Hospital, well, that is, appointed choirmaster at the cathedral with the wardenship as a sort of adjunct to that post, there were some doubts expressed about my appointment. Well, you perhaps are too young to remember. Now, the position was offered me by the Bishop of Barchester quite soon after Eleanor's sister became married to Dr. Grantly, and so it went about that I had gained my preferment because my elder daughter possessed good looks. Well, I suppose it may well be true. One doesn't think about these things as deeply as one should. But it is about the accounts, you say.
Yes, Mr. Harding. In a sense. It has been drawn to my attention, and nothing that I have yet discovered about the matter has persuaded me the other way, that there is good reason to believe that the original requirements of the will, as drawn up by the founder of the hospital, are not being met.
Oh.
That the 12 old men who reside at Hiram's Hospital, the beadsmen, are being treated...
Yes?
Less favourably than they should be.
Less?
According to the letter of the will.
Ah.
Bearing in mind that the property, as left by the will, is now grown quite large. So, I have been asked to look into this discrepancy.
Discrepancy?
Yes. Just as, if you recall, I looked into the matter of the toll gate.
Oh, yes, indeed you did, and with success.
There is no personal enmity, quite the opposite, in what I am doing with regard to the hospital.
Oh, of course not. I presume you are of the opinion that I am not entitled to the £800 I received from the hospital.
I'm not certain yet, but...
You think... There is good reason to believe it. I understand.
Here comes Eleanor. We'll talk no more on these matters. You'll join us for tea?
I think not.
This is a pleasant surprise. Good evening, Mr. Ball.
Good evening, Miss Harding. Thank you all the same, sir, but it would, I feel...
I'm sorry I was not here to greet you.
Forgive me, please. I simply cannot stay. I do apologize. Miss Harding? Mr. Harding?
Mm-hmm.
Have the two of you had some sort of disagreement?
Disagreement? Oh, no, Eleanor, I wouldn't call it quite that.
Mr. Bold is a very determined and energetic man.
Yes, he is.
Sometimes, no doubt, he offends people by his zealousness. But all that he does because he thinks it is good and right.
I'm sure of that. Well, time for tea. Eleanor, my dear. Well, my dear.
I wish you would tell me what is the matter, Papa. If you and Mr. Bold have fallen out, I shall be very angry with you both.
Oh, believe me, you will have no cause for that. £800 a year for 10 years. That's £8,000. To which perhaps I have no title. And which, if that is the case, I therefore ought to repay. I shall see the bishop tomorrow morning.
My dear Harding, I've heard nothing of any kind of protest. But there's no reason for alarm, surely. Send Mr. Bold to the archdeacon. He'll settle it.
But
I'm blessed, you know, to have a son who is so very capable of settling things. Doubly blessed to have him as my archdeacon.
Yes, Bishop, but I would like this particular matter settled to my own satisfaction, if you understand me. I want to be certain for myself that the will is being administered correctly.
Yes, well, I suggest you have a word with the archdeacon. He'll set you right.
Bishop... Did you ever read John Hiram's will?
Read it? Yes, I think I did. Some time ago now, 35 years ago, I suppose, when I was first instituted here. It is an old will, that much I can tell you.
Yes, it was drawn up in the first half of the 15th century.
There you are, a very old will. Talk to the archdeacon, though, if you want the matter settled. He'll settle it.
Yes.
I wonder if this is an appropriate hour for some wine.
Bishop, if, as Mr. Bold has suggested...
I rather think it is.
If the will decrees that the proceeds of the property be divided fairly among the 12 old men at the hospital, who has the power or authority to alter that decree?
I have no idea, Harding. Your wine.
Thank you.
I imagine what happened was that the arrangement altered itself, as it were, over the years, so that what pertains now is confirmed by tradition and usage. Your health, Harding. A certain distance in rank and income must be maintained between the 12 poor and superannuated men and the warden who is responsible for them. Common sense applies, too. If the old men took what at present goes to the warden and the steward, they might no longer be very poor and no longer requiring charity, in which case there would be no need for a hospital. But go and see the archdeacon anyway. He'll settle it. You haven't touched a drink.
But if I saw him, if I went to see Dr. Grantly and found that I couldn't agree with him, though he might, as I'm sure he will, present the argument most forcefully and cogently, but if I still thought that the matter was not settled and that Mr. Bold might well be right and I was in the wrong, what then?
I'm so very sorry, Harding, that this business is troubling you, and I wish I could help. Of course, the Archdeacon... But anyway... Oh, Harding, my dear friend...
Good heavens! The vile insolence of the man!
Do come to bed, Archdeacon.
And he a friend of your sister's?
A close friend, Archdeacon.
The pestilent, interfering upstart! I trust, Susan, that your father has broken all relations with him?
Not that I have heard. It would be quite unlike him if he has.
He should cut the man off forthwith. Forbid any thought of an engagement with Eleanor.
But why?
Why, my dear? Because if Bold marries your sister, he will become my brother-in-law.
And mine.
Your father cannot allow Eleanor to marry a man who is bent on depriving him of his position, his income, and his home. Good heavens! And only imagine, if you dare, what further damage the traitor might attempt once he found himself within the enemy gates. No, he cannot marry Eleanor. Your father must refuse him, and your father must fight him.
That is hardly Papa's way, either.
You'll fight him, my love. I'll see to that.
Yes, Archdeacon. That is, I'm sure you'll try. Are you coming to bed?
Yes. Yes, my dear.
I do not like Mr. Bold.
That much, then, we can agree on.
He is a great deal too conceited for my taste.
And a great deal too much else, Susan.
But my sister likes him, so if she wants to marry him, she should.
Never.
In my view, it would be the best thing all round.
What?
Bold wouldn't trouble himself about the hospital then. I'm sure of it. Good night, Archdeacon.
Well, Chadwick,
Dr. Grantly.
Anything new yet from Cox and Cummins?
Oh, indeed, yes. A letter from them which arrived this morning.
Ah.
They say that since proceedings have not yet been formally begun against us, there are no legal steps that we can take. But they do advise that at the appropriate time it might be expedient to consult that very eminent Queen's Counsel, Sir Abraham Haphazard.
Sir Abraham Haphazard? Oh, yes, Chadwick, I quite agree. He's the best man for us, I'm sure. Thorough churchman.
Very.
Sound conservative.
Extremely.
A good performer in the House, too, of course. Completely put down that scoundrel, do you recall, who's making a fuss about the bishop of Beverley's income. Yes, he's our man. I think we should move quickly, Chadwick, before the other side think to get him. Thorough churchman as he is, he no doubt has his prize.
So tell us then, Abel Handy, what is the amount?
The amount? £100.
£100?
No less. £100 per yearly annum.
And is each one of us in the hospital entitled to it?
Aye, by law.
Who says it?
The lawyer says it, Don.
Mr. Finney, who's working for Mr. Bold. £100. It's ours by rights.
Who's the petitioner going to?
The bishop.
The bishop?
And copies of it will be sent to the newspapers.
The newspapers?
You'll never get all 12 men behind it, Abel Handy. Bunce wouldn't sign it if you threatened him with boils and locusts. He's too fond of the warden for that.
Yes, scalp it, which is a particular annoyance, seeing as he can write his own name. For it would have looked well on the petition, that would. So if you sign, Joe Sculpit, and 10 of us put our marks, and we tell the bishop that Bunce is mad and couldn't be permitted to cast his judgment, why then, 'tis a powerful enough petition, I'd say. Yeah. Cast your judgment then, Joe, and write your name.
Master Bold may try as he might,
Master Bold may enlist all the forces of barbarism and iniquity. Master Bold may slither his way into the affections of the warden's younger daughter. Foolish girl to be deceived so easily, but his machinations shall be thwarted. Nothing in this time-honored place shall be tampered with. Nothing shall be changed. The goodly grace of the cathedral and its venerable institutions shall remain undisturbed. Ah! There he is! Warden!
Warden!
Archdeacon! Good morning. And to you, Eleanor.
Good morning, Dr. Grantly. How is Susan?
Mrs. Grantly is well and sends her love. I wanted to see you, Warden, concerning the hospital.
Ah, yes. Archdeacon...
It is quite clear, Harding, that the way to stop this fellow...
Excuse me, Dr. Grantly. Eleanor, my dear.
Yes, Papa?
Perhaps you would be good enough to go on ahead.
Yes, Papa.
Forgive me, but you see, she and John Bold.
Yes, yes, I'm perfectly acquainted, thank you, with the state of things between them. The advice of Chadwick's attorney is that we consult Sir Abraham Haphazard.
Haphazard?
I think that this is very good advice. He'll put Master Bold in his place. Most certainly he will. I was also informed by Chadwick that a petition is being got up by those old men of yours. You are aware of this petition, I suppose.
Oh, yes.
Are they intending to send it to my father?
Well, I am afraid I have no idea.
But you've taken measures, have you, to obstruct it?
Measures? No.
Oh, Warden.
Why shouldn't they get up a petition?
Why shouldn't they? Why shouldn't they? I'll tell you why they shouldn't, Warden. And I shall tell them, too. Save them the trouble of taking the matter any further. Come, Warden, to the hospital.
Oh. 'Tis a poor thing in a man when he cannot stand up for himself. Are you going to sign, Job, or are you not?
Well, no. Stop waving that pen about Job Sculpit and get your name on the paper.
I'll put him on. Ah, that's the stuff. We're all in the same boat now. Well, nine of us are, which is getting close enough to what is needed. old Bunce won't be too happy when he's... Ah. Morning, Bunce.
Won't be too happy when what, Abel Andy?
When he sees the petition with nine marks upon it. Here.
Is your mark here, Job Sculpit?
Yes. And this is Crumple's mark. And this is Gaze's blotch. I would have signed it proper, but...
Oh, Job Sculpit, you're playing their game, are you? Oh, Job, what a fool you are. You're all fools playing their game, though they don't care whether you live or die. Oh. You think you'll get money from this business? You must be daft. They'll get the money if there's money to be gotten. Then we'll fill your heads with all this nonsense in the first place. Why were you brought to this hospital? Have you all forgotten? You were brought here and you were glad to come because the world had turned against you. Because you couldn't earn your daily bread no more. It's not so you'd get rich so you could have food and shelter. And anyhow, aren't you all as rich in your ways as his reverence is in his? Aren't you getting all you hoped for and much more?
I don't know. We want what John Hiram left us. What's ours by law?
Law? The law wasn't made to help poor men like us.
What's
that about then? What that's about is what I came to tell you. We've all of us to gather in the quadrangle or to listen to the Archdeacon.
Must I stay, Archdeacon?
Yes, you must. For heaven's sake, Harding, don't let us have division in the camp at the very outset. We shall require a long pull, a strong pull, and above all, a pull together.
Shall we? I'd so much sooner not be involved in any pulling. I'd so much sooner remain quiet. Really.
Remain quiet? Remain quiet? Good heavens, do you wish to be ruined in quiet?
Well, yes, if I am to be ruined.
Well, that's nonsense, Warden. Nonsense. Are they all assembled? Is this the 12 of them?
11. George Bell is in bed.
What? At this hour?
He is sick.
Ah, right.
Now, my men. I want to say a few words to you concerning the will of John Hiram.
and concerning a certain petition which I believe it is your intention to address to my Lord Bishop, and which expresses the opinion that you do not receive from John Hiram's estate all that is due. Now, what is it, pray, that you are asking for? What is it you want, exactly, that you haven't got here?
£100 a year.
£100.
To each of us. Each year. You're great.
Oh, dear. Come now. Do you honestly think that John Hiram, when he drew up his will all those centuries ago, intended it that £100 a year be given to 12 old men? Men who in their prime earn no more than half a crown each day? Is this what he had in mind when he built his hospital? Of course not. He meant that 12 poor, worn-out labourers who could labour no more, the infirm, the blind and the like, who must starve and die a miserable death if not protected by the hand of charity, he meant that such men should come here to the hospital and should find shelter, find also a little leisure in their old age to make their peace with God. That is what he meant, I assure you. Without having read the will, you are complaining that the will's instructions have not been met. You are demanding £100 a year. £100? Good heavens, you must be mad! I tell you this, while you remain at this hospital, you will never receive 100 pence more than what you have now. Indeed, it is very possible that on account of this disgraceful affair, you will even find yourselves with something less than what you've been getting.
No.
Do not be surprised if there are changes. My lord, the bishop, and the warden here...
No, my friends, there will be no changes as long as you and I are together here. You will be no worse off, I assure you.
God bless you, Reverend. God bless you.
Forgive me, Dr. Grantley, I interrupted your speech.
I suppose I have finished now.
Dear friends, the Archdeacon has said all that he wished to. Our thanks for your kind attention.
Thank you, Your Reverence.
So, I made things pretty plain to them, I think.
Oh, yes. Pretty plain.
One must be plain, you know, with this sort of people. Otherwise, one will not be understood.
But they understood me, Warden.
Yes, Archdeacon. Yes, I believe they did.
It is very odd, do you not think, John? Why 2 notes inviting each of us to the same party?
I can't imagine.
Perhaps a great change is coming upon the world, and Mr. Harding has decided to be fashionable.
How much easier this would all be if he could bear me ill will. Or rather, if he could show me that he does. Instead, he must write to me and express himself in generous, cordial terms, and make me feel much more of an unpardonable wretch than if he had turned on me in anger and with sharp words exposed my every fault.
I suppose since we have been given separate invitations, we must write out separate acceptances.
Yes, Mary. Or rather, you must accept on your own behalf. But I'm afraid I shall not be going to the party.
You won't? Why, ever not?
I wish I could, but I fear I cannot go to Mr. Harding's house for the time being. Not as a friend.
Oh, brother, dearest. Have you quarrelled with Eleanor?
No, not with Eleanor. Nor with Mr. Harding, indeed. I rather wish we had quarrelled.
What do you mean?
The situation, Mary, is that I have taken up the plight of the 12 beadsmen of Hiram's hospital. It's a long story, and I shall explain it to you in due course, but the upshot of it is that I intend to see if justice can be done for these poor folk of the city so that they can receive what they are entitled to under law. And as a result of this inquiry, it may well be that what has previously gone into the pocket of the warden will henceforth be directed to the benefit of the men of the hospital.
I see. And why must you do this, John? Why must you take up their plight?
Why should anyone? On that principle, injustice is never to be opposed, and the weak, the oppressed, and the poor are never to be given help.
But you are a friend
friend of Mr. Harding.
Yes, or at least I was. On matters such as this, however, private motives and feelings must never be allowed to interfere. I esteem Mr. Harding, but does that mean I must turn a deaf ear to the dictates of my conscience?
And what then of Eleanor?
If she has the kind of spirit I think she has, she'll not condemn me.
But you love her.
Yes.
And I tell you now that she loves you.
I have hoped that she might. But I cannot, because of a love that she and I may share, go back from this task. Private feelings, as I say, must not interfere.
You'll break her heart, John. You will break your own. Oh, why must you do this? Why must you play the great reformer, the writer of wrongs?
I'm not playing at anything.
Do what you were trained to do and heal the sick.
Oh, Barchester has a legion of doctors and surgeons. There isn't enough sickness to go round. But the number of reformers, as you put it, are somewhat less, and there is plenty of business for them.
What good will you do these men from the hospital? You will never make them happier than they are now.
Mary.
Give up this dream, John. Give up this grand dream of justice. Give up this madness.
My dear sister, you don't understand.
I understand the misery you'll bring on yourself, and on Eleanor, and Mr. Harding, and me. Oh, may I at least write to Eleanor and say that you will go to the party?
No, Mary. No, you may not.
They are for all to see.
Papa?
Yes, my dearest. I'm just going to my study to collect the cello. I've been persuaded to join the band.
Papa?
I think we can say that it is going pleasantly enough, though I wish the Archdeacon wouldn't shout so loudly when he's at the card table.
Papa, Mr. Bold is not here tonight.
No, I did write to him.
Well, do you know why he has not come?
Mm-hmm.
Papa?
Well, my dear, I could guess. Has Mary not spoken about him at all?
She gave an excuse for him, but it was clear enough it was not the true reason. I know something is wrong between the two of you. That day when he was here...
Yes. Tell me, Eleanor, sweetest Mel, do you like Mr. Bow much?
Do I like him?
Well, like is a poor word. Do you love him?
Why do you ask me, Papa?
Dearest child, there is, as you say, something wrong between Mr. Bold and myself, and I will explain it to you, and you will understand why he is not here this evening. But listen, dear Mel, if you loved John Bold before, if you love him now, there is no cause why you should not go on loving him. He is a good man. I'm certain of that.
I shall always judge my father to be right, and those who oppose him I shall judge to be wrong. Of this latter number I shall be forgiving to those who do not know him, considering they are mistaken through ignorance or error of judgment. But if I see him attacked by those who know him, or say that they do, and who therefore should love him and revere him, I will, I fear, be much less charitable. Oh, Eleanor.
Well...
Well, sister?
May I ask what Eleanor said in her letter?
Oh, well, just how sorry she is that I wasn't able to attend the party and what a success it was. Is that the Jupiter?
It is the Jupiter. It contains an article which will be of interest to you.
Ah.
A leading article. I will leave you to gloat over it in private.
A leader in the Jupiter. My cause, my crusade, taken up by the Jupiter. Well, here we are. We are informed that the warden of an old almshouse attached to Barchester Cathedral is in receipt of 25 times the annual income appointed for him. Yes! Now things will begin to move. It is impossible to conceive a case of greater injustice here, here. On what foundation, moral or divine, is grounded the warden's claim to the large income he receives for doing nothing? Does he ever ask himself, when he stretches wide his clerical palm? But I'd rather they hadn't made a personal attack on Mr. Harding.
Does his conscience never entertain the question of his right to such subsidies, or is it possible that the subject never so presents itself?
Thank you, Archdeacon. Perhaps Harding has heard enough. Have you heard enough, Harding?
Pretty well enough, I think.
It's monstrous. It's diabolical.
What am I to do? What am I to do?
Well, I suppose you might try writing to the Jupiter and presenting an opposing view.
Oh, yes. And find yourself smothered with ridicule or thoroughly shaken like a terrier shakes a rat. Mm. Accidentally omit some word in your answer, Warden, and you'll be branded ignorant. Make some trivial mistake and it'll be interpreted as a falsehood or a blasphemy. I fear there is no point in resisting an attack from the Jupiter, even if one has the best of cases. In such matters, the Jupiter is all-powerful.
Yes. Sells a great many copies, too.
40,000, Warden.
No.
And each copy, I understand, is read by 5 persons at least.
Oh, dear, what am I to do?
We could have anticipated this attack, Warden. Oh, these are words, merely. And everyone knows that the paper takes up any affair, whether the substance of it is right or wrong, true or false, so long as it thinks that by so doing, it can promulgate its own prejudices.
Yes, yes.
Everyone knows that. And everyone who knows you, Warden, will think none the worse of you because of this small thunderclap from the Jupiter.
So if I am not to write to the paper...
At the very best, it would only serve to remind readers of what they had already half forgotten.
What is then to be done?
We must wait.
Wait for what, Archdeacon?
Why? For some word from Sir Abraham Haphazard, of course. He's our man.
Yes, Bunce, what is it?
I just came to tell your reverence how sorry I am. I mean about this matter which is bothering you so sorely.
Yes, thank you.
And also, I hope there'll be a speedy end to it.
Thank you, Bunce.
Also, your reverence, I wanted to inform you that I did not sign the petition.
Well, that was very kind of you, Bunce, and single-minded. Thank you.
What am I to do then if I am not to write to the Jupiter? What if the Archdeacon is wrong? What if there are people spread throughout the land who have read that article and who believe what they read? How can I persuade them that I am not a thief? But I'm not an avaricious priest who has snatched money from the poor, bread from the hungry. I simply took what I was offered. But even that was wrong, perhaps.
I fear it's your fault, Archdeacon. I told you from the beginning how it would end.
Good heavens, how can you say so?
You shouldn't have been so against the idea of John Bold becoming your brother-in-law. You shouldn't have protested so violently about him visiting Papa's house.
But Susan, my dear...
If it wasn't for your opposition, you know, it is quite probable that he would have married Eleanor by now, and this whole sorry business, I'm sure, would never have been contemplated. Oh. You've put him in a huff.
I shall fight it out with him, my dear.
Yes, I knew you would.
I will fight, and I will win. No surrender. Sir Abraham Haphazard.
Oh, Sir Abraham.
He'll soon be sending us his opinion, and then we'll see what Master Bowl is made of. Sir Abraham, you know, has had to devote much of his time recently to the preparation of the Convent Custody Bill.
The Convent Custody Bill?
Yes, Susan. Enabling Protestant clergymen over the age of 50 to search nuns who are suspected of possessing treasonable papers or Jesuitical symbols. The bill will have 137 clauses, I believe, so Sir Abraham has been rather busy.
Busy or not, Sir Abraham will not get Eleanor a husband, nor will he get Papa another income when the poor man has been hounded out of the hospital. So, what will you do then, Archdeacon, when you have both Papa and my sister on your hands?
Excuse me, Archdeacon, but Mr. Chadwick is waiting.
Chadwick? He was in London yesterday, my dear. He may well have important news. I'll see him in my study. Well, Dr. Grantley, here it is. All this is Sir Abraham's opinion.
It is. Now, the thrust of it...
Yes, quickly tell me the thrust of it.
According to Sir Abraham, the warden and the steward of the hospital, viz. Respectively, Mr. Harding and myself...
Yes, yes.
...are merely the hospital's paid servants. The defendant in the case should, if anyone, be the Corporation of Barchester, or possibly the chapter, or indeed your father.
So Master Bold is on the wrong scent, eh?
That is Sir Abraham's opinion. But he also believes that we're a baffled Bold whichever way. If he had gone for the bishop, for instance, we'd have argued that your father is technically not liable, since he has never formally consented to overall responsibility for the hospital.
Good, good.
In every case, says Sir Abraham, the legal points are so nice that we can force Bold into £15,000 cost before he can resolve them. And Mr. Bold doesn't have that kind of money.
Oh, Chadwick, this is excellent news. I told you Sir Abraham was our man.
You did. You did. You will take pains, won't you, to ensure that this copy of Sir Abraham's opinion is not seen or its contents divulged?
I will.
We wouldn't wish to teach the enemy how to fight its own battle.
Absolutely not.
Your father and Mr. Harding, however, may be given so much of the opinion as will satisfy them that the matter is going well.
Certainly. I'll see them both tomorrow.
Under the law, then, I am a paid servant.
That is correct. You and Chadwick.
With an allotted stipend.
Correct.
I have to say I rather regret the use of the word servant and a stipend. I hope you won't take offense at them, Harding.
Oh, by no means. A rose, you know.
Formal terminology, that's all, as expressed in Sir Abraham's opinion. The point is this. You're no lawyer, Warden, so I put it very simply. Since it is necessary to have servants for the use of the hospital, their level of pay must depend on the going rate, according to market value.
Dear, dear.
And it can be fixed only by those who manage the hospital.
Oh. Well, who does manage the hospital?
Well, that's another question. Let Bold and his friends scratch their heads over that one. The fact is, the action is at present being brought against you and Chadwick, and this is your defense. And a perfect defense, too, is it not? Most satisfactory. And completely conclusive.
But on this argument, I might as well have $1,600 a year as eight, if the managers choose to give it to me.
Warden.
And surely I myself must be one of the managers, whoever the others might be. Perhaps, indeed, I am the chief manager, so that can hardly be a decent and proper arrangement.
Warden, please. It is very simple. The question is whether a tribe of cheating attorneys and pestilent dissenters are to interfere with an arrangement which is essentially just and which is serviceable to the church,
yes,
or whether we shall beat them off. Pray, let us not be splitting hairs, not at least amongst ourselves. Otherwise, there'll be no end to this business and no end to the cost.
Are you any happier now, Harding?
Forgive me, but I find it too distressing. If this stipend of £800 a year is my due, if I have a just and honest claim to it, as God well knows I always thought I had, then, well, I am anxious to retain it. I have myself and my daughter to look after. At my age, I have become accustomed to certain comforts. Also, I am anxious to demonstrate that I am right, that I have acted properly in the past, but I cannot do it. Not at this price.
Not at this price? What do you mean, Warden?
I cannot endure what has already been said of me, what has been written of me. Bishop, I can't be indifferent. I can't be contented. Would you, my lord, expect me to be so?
No, no.
I cannot do it.
My dear Harding, you will not be asked to do anything that is painful. You will only do what your heart tells you is right. Is that not the case, Archdeacon?
Well, my lord, I see the matter thus wise. It is not only ourselves we have to look to here. The interest of the church is in our charge. We cannot abandon what has been entrusted to us. We cannot yield on this occasion, else nothing will be safe from attack, and the Church of England will fall altogether.
Oh.
There is no justice in the charges brought against you. You know that. You are convinced of your own honesty, and yet you would yield, give up the fight. And why? Cowardice, Warden.
Oh, no.
Cowardice.
Cowardice, dear, oh dear.
You owe it to the church to fight this fight. You owe it to my father to support him. You owe it to those wardens who preceded you at Hiram's Hospital to assert the legality of their position. You owe it to those who are to come after you to maintain the wardenship undamaged as you received it. And you owe it to us all, so that in perfect brotherhood we may support our great cause.
Oh, dear.
You haven't eaten very well, Papa.
No. No, I've managed as well as you. I'm very sorry, my dear. I wish I could be in better spirits.
Bunce was telling me that good news was expected from London.
Good news? Ah, yes. Good news from London. I know I am not the first. Other servants of the church have been attacked, and most viciously too, for taking what was not theirs, allegedly. For growing rich by doing nothing, allegedly. I have read of such cases. I have heard the gossip. And it has made me want...
Yes, Papa.
It has made me wonder how they could possibly carry on. These people who were attacked, how they were able to face their fellow men when their names had been bandied about, when so much abuse had been heaped on them. And now, it's happening to me. It's happening to me. What will you do this evening, Eleanor?
I hadn't thought, Papa.
Now, the weather is very pleasant. You mustn't stay in on my account.
But you were so very sad.
Yes, well, we all must have our share of sadness.
Papa, won't you tell me what it is about? Well,
you know what it is about, my dearest.
But this is a fresh sorrow, I think, on top of what was already there. And I want to share your sorrow, Papa, even though I cannot make it disappear.
Sweetest Nell.
We are everything to each other now. Please, Papa, tell me what the matter is.
My own child.
Papa.
It isn't right. Why should you be made unhappy too? It may come to that, of course. We may have to leave this place, and that will be a great cause of sorrow. Until then...
But is that all, Papa? If leaving here is our only sadness, let us leave this house and have light hearts elsewhere. Oh, Papa, you and I could be happy wherever we were, as long as we had bread to eat and our hearts were light.
Yes, dearest Nell, I think we could be. And yet...
You must have no doubts on my account, Papa. My happiness does not depend upon a pony carriage or a fine drawing room. Papa, this place cannot gladden my heart, not while there is a question about your honour in staying here. Put me in the smallest of tiny cottages, and I could truly be as contented as the day is long. Provided I could see that you were happy too.
No. My sweetest, most precious Nell. I would leave this house today, believe me. I would give up the wardenship.
My life here these past 10 years has been a pleasant one, I know, but I fear that everything that has made it so is somehow tainted. And yet, I think I must attempt to stay. To give it up is what I want. But there are obligations, you see. Obligations to others and to myself. I should not relish being called a coward, any more than I have enjoyed being charged with avarice.
Good morning, Mary.
Oh, Eleanor. Do you have a few minutes to spare?
I have the whole day to spare if you need it.
I must ask for your help with regard to the hospital.
Yes.
I wanted to arrange that I can talk with your brother. Tomorrow, if he has returned from London by then.
No, by then he will have gone back.
Oh, so he is here in Barchester.
He arrived unexpectedly this morning. You know, Eleanor, I think this whole affair is a sort of extravagant act of folly. He has spent a week in town seeing lawyers and members of Parliament and people in newspaper offices. And now he is here on further business. But tonight he plans to take the mail train and be in London again. So much rushing and chasing.
Might Mr. Bold have time, do you suppose, to let me speak to him today?
We will make sure that he does. He is over at his horrid attorney's at present, but he should be at the house by luncheon.
It is very important that I see him.
You shall see him, dearest sister.
Thank you. I wish you would not call me sister.
But of course I must. Since sisters we are in all but name.
No, Mary.
And you must call me sister too. No more Mr. Bold, please. He is John, and you shall call him so. This business of the hospital will, in time, in quick time, I hope, be settled. John is suffering from a temporary madness only. When he discovers the extent of the hurt that he is causing your father and yourself, he will come to his senses.
I hope and pray that he will.
And then, dearest sister? Why then?
No. No, you must not have any thoughts about me and Mr. Bold. You must not say any more about that sort of thing, even in a joking way.
I wasn't joking, Eleanor. But will you tell me why you wish to see him?
I want simply to beg him to give up this action of his. Give it up before my father is injured any further.
Yes, and then?
Why, when I have begged him, then I very much hope that your brother might relent.
I think it is more than possible that he will. But when he has relented, dear Eleanor, what then?
Mary, whatever there was between myself and Mr. Bold cannot continue.
Of course it can and will. It is the most natural thing in the world that, having relented, he will ask you there and then to be his wife, and everything will end quite happily.
No, Mary.
But Eleanor...
No.
Having demonstrated his better nature in yielding to you, might he not be rewarded?
No. That would be wrong. I'm not ashamed to beg from Mr. Bold and urge him to confer this great favour upon Papa, but it is as Papa's daughter that I will plead, and no other terms will be permitted in the bargaining.
And yet you love John. I know you do. And he loves you, Eleanor, better than anything in the world.
Mary, this is nonsense.
You do love him. You love him with all your heart. Eleanor? There. I knew it.
It makes no difference, though.
Does it not?
No. Not to the favour I must ask of him. And Mary, you must tell him nothing.
Concerning the purity and depth of your love for him, you mean?
Oh, you are the cruelest of girls. And the kindest.
Oh. Well now, time is moving on. I must make a start on copying out Finney's notes on the will, write a letter to Tom Towers, in case I fail to see him tomorrow, and advise him that the notes may well be of interest to readers of the Jupiter. And I ought to write to Eleanor, too. Imploring her to look upon me with understanding and compassion. Is it to be the case, I shall ask her, that my resolve to carry out what is, after all, my public duty, should mean that I am lowered in your estimation? or words to that effect. And while I'm at it, I should write to her father as well, imploring him likewise to look upon me with understanding, etc. Something along the lines of, is it to be the case that these recent untoward events should be a bar to our ancient friendship, or to an even closer tie? Perhaps it would be better to wait until Mr. Harding has lost his income and his home. Oh, must it come to that? And then ask for Eleanor's hand in what might be interpreted as a gesture of reconciliation? Or of extreme insensitivity? What if you have lost your home, Mr. Harding? What if you have lost your income, too? You're about to acquire a son-in-law. Oh, best of all, I should give up this business entirely. Drop the lawsuit. Go to Australia and make a fresh start. With Eleanor, of course. Oh, what am I to do? I love her. Perhaps I should blow out my brains.
Well, he's home. This is the coach you took with him this morning. Shall I tell him you are here?
Yes. No, wait. How's my hair?
Your hair is perfect.
But this curl, just here.
That curl just there is very pretty. And anyway, I would have thought a curl or two out of place quite becomes a young woman lodging an appeal on her father's behalf.
John?
Yes, Mary.
John, there is a visitor.
A visitor, but you know her, a little tired.
It is Eleanor Harding.
Miss Harding?
Yes, and she is coming in to speak to you.
Very well.
He's ready to see you, sister dear.
You must not leave me alone with him, Mary, whatever you do. Promise me you won't.
After you, Eleanor. Mr. Bowles.
Miss Harding, this is a...
How do you
most
do?
Pleasant surprise, thank you. I'm very well. How are you?
I am well. I have good enough health, at least.
Splendid. I'm so glad to hear it. Excellent.
Perhaps Eleanor would like to be invited to take a seat.
Of course. Forgive me. Do sit down, Miss Harding. Mary. I am sorry that I've seen so little of you of late. I have been required to spend some time in London.
Yes.
What a fatuous place London is. And what a delight when one gets back to Barchester. It's very hot, don't you think?
It is very hot.
And Mr. how is your father? Forgive me, I interrupted you.
My father, Mr. Bold, is not very well. And it is expressly to speak about my father that I am come here.
I am sorry your father isn't well. I hope it's nothing too serious.
He is unwell because he is unhappy. He is very unhappy on account of this affair of the hospital. You would pity him, Mr. Bold, if you could see how wretched it has made him.
Oh, Miss Harding.
Anyone would pity him, I think, but you would pity him especially, Mr. Bold, because you are his friend. He is much altered. His cheerfulness has all gone, and his sweet temper and the kind, happy tone that was in his voice. You would hardly know him if you met him.
Miss Harding.
As I say, he is not well. And I do believe that if this business goes on, if it goes on, he will die.
Die?
Oh, Eleanor! I am sure, as is Papa, that it was not you, Mr. Bold, who wrote those things in the newspaper.
No, Miss Harding. I can tell you most assuredly that it was not.
Such an act of cruelty would be beyond you, I know. But, Mr. Bold, that article in the paper, I tell you, it has nearly killed him. To be called avaricious, to be called dishonest...
I have never used those terms of him.
No, but others have. And if this goes on... If such things are written again, it will kill Papa. You must realize he does not care about the income from the hospital.
Of course he doesn't.
Money isn't at all important to Papa.
I know of nobody less touched by material possessions.
Thank you. It's good to hear you say so. I can't bear the idea that people should think unjustly of Papa. He would give up the hospital altogether, only the Archdeacon has told him it would be an act of cowardice and desertion and one which would damage the church, so he cannot leave, can he? Not, I mean, because the Archdeacon has told him he mustn't, but because it wouldn't be right.
I understand. Miss Harding, it would be impossible for anyone who knows your father personally to accuse him for one moment.
He would leave the hospital if he could. Leave it tomorrow. Give up the house and the income, and I wish... I do so wish that he would. In all this business, it is he who has to bear the punishment. It is he who suffers. And why? What wrong has he done? How has he deserved this persecution? Dearest Papa, who never had an unkind thought in his life, who never said an unkind word.
Oh, Miss Hardy, I have not argued that your father is in any way to blame.
Then why must he be persecuted? Why must he be made so wretched? Why did you begin all this?
Well, I felt that in the particular circumstance...
Mr. Bold, why?
I was impelled to...
Mr. Bold! I want you to abandon this proceeding against my father. Mr. Bold, I implore you, abandon it. Do not destroy a man who has loved you so well. Spare his life. Spare his reason. For either his life or his reason will pay the forfeit, believe me, if this goes on.
Oh, Miss Harding. What can I say to her? She has destroyed me utterly. Of course I should abandon the proceeding. Of course I must show compassion towards Mr. Harding. But if I do, what then will become of me?
Mr. Bowles?
Will I be contented? Having renounced a cause that had justice and fairness on its side, will I be happy to see this matter progress and me no longer part of it?
John, you must speak to her.
For that's the other thing. The matter will progress, whether I stay with it or no. But how can I say as much to Eleanor? Dare I tell her that it has gone quite beyond my control? I have raised a storm, a wild and angry storm. And whatever I do now, I know I cannot quell it.
That was episode 1 of The Warden by Anthony Trollope, dramatized for radio by Martin Wade. Harding was played by Alec McCann, Eleanor by Juliet Aubrey, John Bold by Douglas Hodge, Dr. Grantley by Stephen Moore, and Mary by Janet Moore. The Bishop of Barchester was played by Peter Howell, Bunce by Norman Bird, Mrs. Grantley by Gilly Bond, Chadwick by David Collins, Crumple by Garrard Green, Gazy by Derek Waring, Handy by Gavin Muir, and Sculpit by Jonathan Keeble. The Warden was directed by Terry Cookson.